The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Badgers podcast is with you, post-holiday edition. The Thanksgiving break has come and gone. Hope you enjoyed yourself with family and friends, ate a lot of good food. The college football, not as tasty as the Badgers. This is becoming a little bit of a worst-case scenario season. They're still bowl eligible, so it's not worst-case scenario, but a 37-15 loss to Minnesota, a Golden Gophers team that wasn't even bowl eligible until they pulled off the victory in Camp Randall Stadium, the first time Wisconsin's lost in Camp Randall to Minnesota since 1994, and Paul Bunyan's axe for the first time in 14 years, 15 years technically, after 14 straight Badgers victories in the rivalry, Paul Bunyan's axe is now living across the border. Absolutely demoralizing loss in a season full of pretty bad games. I mean, let's be honest, this is an absolute stunner of a season for the Wisconsin Badgers. This is just not what anyone saw coming. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am host of the Wisconsin Badgers Journal Sentinel podcast. Going to be joined here shortly by Jeff Patricus. He is the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering the Wisconsin Badgers. We will talk about this game. Had a bit of a surprise. I don't know if it's a surprise, but Alex Hornibrook, who has been out several weeks with a concussion, he did play in the game and was able to start. It did not go well. He threw three interceptions. He fumbled the ball away after the game was in hand. Did throw for two touchdowns and 189 yards, but it was a pretty rough showing for Alex Hornibrook and really every facet of the Badgers. Offense, defense, and special teams all had a hand in this one. Jonathan Taylor did run for 120 yards, but it's just another bad lopsided loss. A late touchdown makes it even sound closer than it was. It was not a good game, and certainly the cherry on top of a season in which the Badgers woefully underperformed expectations. This was a team that came into the season as a potential college football playoff team. Sports Illustrated and many others had them as a top four team in the country. They finished definitely unranked, 7-5, barely bowl eligible. If you look back at the season, needed to win kind of a couple thrillers against both Iowa and Purdue on the road to even get eligible for a bowl. That is just not the sequence we saw coming. So Jeff Patricus will be here to chat about it. We'll talk a little bit about the basketball team as well, which took second in the Battle for Atlantis over the Thanksgiving weekend, falling to number 4 Virginia in the title game in the Bahamas. Pretty good showing for Bucky basketball, but this football game is obviously the thing that we're talking about and thinking about right now. Let's go over the stats real quickly. Again, the score was 37-15. Hornibrook, as we mentioned, completed 22 of 33 passes for those 189 yards, three interceptions, two touchdowns. Not a good day for him. Jonathan Taylor, 19 carries for 120 yards, 6.3 average. That's still not bad. Garrett Groshek, 4 carries for 44 yards, also solid. Danny Davis had a great game receiving the ball, 10 catches, 93 yards, and a touchdown. Davis has really kind of sprung to life here over the last couple games. Jake Ferguson caught a touchdown as well, 5 catches, 46 yards for him. TJ Edwards, back-to-back now, great games on defense. He had 12 total tackles, one of the senior leaders on that defensive unit, and certainly a guy that the Badgers will miss next year. It's unfortunate for him that his career is winding to a close. There's still a bowl game to come, but his last regular season game involves ceding the axe to Minnesota. Rafael Gaglianone missed a field goal, a short field goal in this one. He's struggled a little bit this year, has missed a number of field goals. I believe credited here with one extra point. They did go for two in the last touchdown of the night. So that was it from Rafael. Minnesota's quarterback Tanner Morgan, 9 of 16 for 124 yards, no touchdowns or interceptions. Bryce Williams ran for two touchdowns, 8 carries, 50 yards. Muhammad Ibrahim, 1 touchdown, 26 carries, 121 yards. The team's workhorse. And Minnesota's Tyler Johnson leading the way, receiving 4 catches, 76 yards. Again, not a great showing. The Badgers, after blowing out Minnesota last year, 31-0, it's just sort of the latest, like, man, they just sort of the latest thing where you just think they're going to find that next gear. They just never have, and it has been such a struggle of a season. They now await word on where they're going to go in the bowl season, where they're going to play. We'll talk to Jeff Patricus about that right here. Let's bring him in. Here now is Jeff Patricus. He was at the Badgers game at Camp Randall Stadium when Minnesota gave the Badgers one last frustrating note to this 2018 season. Jeff, before we get into the individual aspects of this game, this team obviously had high expectations to start the year. They have not fulfilled them. 7-5. They're bowl eligible, but not much else has gone right. I'm wondering, there've been injuries, there've been reasons why this has happened, but in all the teams you've seen, Is this the most disappointing? I mean, is this the most kind of underachieving team that you've witnessed, or are there others that we're forgetting about because of sort of a recency bias?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've been here since 95, so 95 would be 4-5-2 coming off back-to-back bowl seasons under Alvarez. 2001 would be 1, the last time they didn't go to a bowl game. 2000 would be 1, coming off back-to-back Rose Bowls, and they thought they might have a national championship team. They ended up in the Sun Bowl in El Paso. I was joking with Anthony Davis, who was a redshirt freshman in 2001, about fan reaction, and he said, "We didn't even go to a bowl my first season." That was 2001. So 2008 would be another one, where that season ended with a 42-13 bowl loss to Florida State. And that team started out unbeaten a little bit, had the meltdown at Michigan with Allen Everett at quarterback. And that season deteriorated, and there wasn't a lot of leadership down the stretch. There was some infighting. So there have been other seasons that have been worse. I know people will counter, well, those teams weren't ranked number 4 to start the season. Well, the 08 team was, I think, reached as high as number 5, might have been. But anyway, this team, if you ask the players, it's probably on par with 2015, where they thought they could win the Big Ten West Championship in Paul's first year. And they lost to Iowa right out of the gate, and then they were in the race all the way till the end, and then they suffered that really bitter loss to Northwestern in the home finale that year. They finished off by winning at Minnesota, if I remember correctly. But yeah, I mean, are they disappointed? Absolutely. But there have been, since I've covered the team, other years that have been worse than this, much worse than this.
We chatted a little last week about where this Badgers team might end up for bowl season, and I'm not sure how this loss changes any of that. What the Pinstripe Bowl was one you mentioned last week that kind of is intriguing to me. What are some of the other options that you're still looking at now that the Badgers regular season is over at 7-5?
Perhaps Jacksonville. Before they lost to Minnesota, there was a legitimate chance they could end up in Tampa. I'm guessing that's probably not nearly as likely anymore. The wild card is still going to be what happens in the Big Ten championship game and how many teams in the Big Ten say Ohio State wins. So say you end up getting 3 teams in major bowls, Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State. Then that changes everything around. Going out to Santa Clara is a possibility because here's the thing that throws a wrench in everything. With the agreements now, you know, they want to rotate teams through in different bowls. They want so many different teams in so many years to keep it fresh for the bowls, keep it fresh for the fans. So it's a little more wide open. It's not as structured as it used to be. But the most important thing that will affect it is how many Big Ten teams, if there's one in the college football playoff, moves everybody up. And if there's 3 in major bowls, it's going to affect everybody.
Alex Hordebrook was back at quarterback in this game. He'd spent the last couple games in the concussion protocol. He struggled in this game. He started okay, but then kind of tailed off. 3 interceptions, lost a fumble kind of after the game was in hand. I guess just your general thoughts on how he played his first game back in a while. I mean, you could say he was rusty, but that doesn't really match up with how he played early in the game. He looked good early. So what did you see from Alex Hordebrook?
Well, the first thing about this game is I know a lot of players were asked whether or not Hordebrook was rusty in his start. And I was kind of confused by that because he was 7 of his first 9 for 64 yards he completed. And of that bunch, he was 4-5 for 37 yards on first down with 4 conversions and 1 sack. So he did not start off like a guy who looked rusty. In fact, he looked sharper than I thought he would be. His issue, I thought, was there were 2 things. The first interception was bad. He didn't see the corner who made the interception drop off a different guy. So he forced it into coverage, basically. And then there was another play on their first possession, and I highlighted that in a story, where it was 3rd and 4, I want to say from the 13, and it was a scoreless game. He had Danny Davis and Groshek to the right. Groshek out wide, Davis inside. Groshek did an in-breaking route, had a linebacker on his hip, but was open at the first down marker, and Hordebrook went to Davis on a fade. It looked from the tape like he kind of had an idea pre-snap that that's where he wanted to go. But if he throws it to Groshek in that instance, he's got at least a first down, maybe a touchdown. So I thought that was one where he just probably predetermined things. But after the first interception, then there was one on third down that he forced, the one that was tipped by Kendrick Pryor, when Pryor went up high to get it. So that was one where he probably should have thrown it away, and he mentioned that after the game. I think what happens with Alex is sometimes if he gets out of rhythm, or it's like a shooter, if you start missing some shots, you press a little bit, and he didn't get it back. He got it back late in the first half on that two-minute drive. But in the second half, there was that second interception, and they just never established a rhythm again on third down. And sometimes he struggles to get it back if he's on a hot streak and there's a couple mistakes. He doesn't always find a way to get it back, and he's got to work on that.
Right, things were looking really good after that late drive in the first half. Even though the Badgers were down 10, it looked like they kind of, like you said, that they had their groove back. But Minnesota kept scoring in the second half. Why, just in general, without even asking anything specifically about it, why do you think the defense just struggled so much slowing down the Golden Gophers in this game?
Well, no different than what's been the issue this year. They're not as good against the run as they were a year ago, and that shouldn't be surprising to anybody. I mean, if you look at the top five linemen they were able to rotate last year, it was Sagapolo at nose, it was three senior ends, Alec James, Chikwe, and Connor Sheehy, and then your fifth lineman was Isaiah Loudermilk. That was last year. Now this year, now with Sagapolo out, you've got Bryson Williams, Loudermilk, Henningsen, maybe David Pfaff is in there, Lyles. You just don't have the experience or the playmakers up front to be stout against the run to keep guys off the linebackers. And you also you're not as strong on the outside. And when I say strong, I mean guys being able to set the edge. Like Jacobs and Dooley were physical linebackers. And if you look at Minnesota's first touchdown run on fourth and one, where the tailback bounces it out to the outside around left edge, Zach Bond engages with the left tackle. I'm guessing, since there's no one else out there on that side, it's Zach's job to set the edge of the defense there. He comes down hard, engages with the left tackle, and can't get off the block. So the back has no resistance. He can just scoot around, and the closest defender to him turns out to be TJ Edwards, who was in the middle of the formation. So it's things like that when you can't stop the run. That's why Minnesota held the ball for 9 minutes to start the fourth quarter, 9 minutes and change. You never saw that happen last year. I mean, and that's the issue that's been there all year.
Special teams, too, has struggled, it seems like, this season. I don't know if that's your impression, but they have the return touchdown, obviously, in the first half. That's big. Rafael Gaglianone missed a field goal. He's struggled a little bit this year, I would say. It just seems like they've been unable on their own returns to get anything generated. We haven't seen Aaron Cruikshank really break one. You know, he's had a couple okay runs, but what is your impression of special teams this season? Has it been a disappointment in your mind?
They haven't been able to complement the offense and the defense, which is what you need. One of the things Paul Chris was asked after the game Saturday was if Wisconsin won any of the three battles, offense, defense, or special teams against Minnesota. He said no. And he expanded on that, talking about how you might have a mistake by one unit, and then it's the job of the next unit to pick it up. And if you look at what that punt return touchdown, their coverage units have been basically pretty good. Kickoffs has been easy because you got Jack Hintz putting the ball in the end zone. But they really haven't given up a lot of big returns on punts until yesterday. But part of that problem that they're not – I looked at the tape yesterday. Their gunners last year were Tindall and Nick Nelson. Those guys got down – or Jamerson, excuse me. They could rotate any of those guys in. And those guys were down there in a hurry. You got a lot of punts that were down. You had really good coverage. Yesterday on the punt return, it was Adam Krumholtz and Seth Kearns were the gunners. Kearns didn't get down the field that quickly. Krumholtz did, but was taken out by two guys. But you had Van Ginkel and Groshek were the two guys who could have pinched and gotten the returner, about maybe after a four-yard return. Groshek overran it a little bit. It looked like Van Ginkel got pushed in the back, and he went down. And then once the returner got past those two guys, there was no one else there. So it looked there was no integrity behind the first wave. And he was able to get to the outside. So it's part of the problem is you don't have as good as gunners as last year. They're using a lot of their defensive players on those coverage units because Conley's on there. TJ Edwards is on there. Van Ginkel's on there. I think Zach Bond is on punt coverage. And those guys played a lot of snaps yesterday.
One of the guys you mentioned last week when we previewed Minnesota a little bit was Blake Cashman, and one of their great defensive players. He's ejected from this game pretty early on. Were you surprised that the Badgers couldn't take advantage of that, or did you think anything? Did you think Minnesota had to adjust with him out, and what maybe they did that kept things pretty smooth from their perspective?
Yeah, I don't think there was one individual that really had a big impact on Minnesota's defense. I look at some of the drives that Wisconsin had that they didn't finish. Getting back to the first one a little bit, before the third down throw, I think they had a second and four, or second and five, something like that. And Deal gets the handoff, and the line gets no push. Michael Dieter gets shoved into the back towards the line of scrimmage, and Deal gets nothing, which leaves them then in a throwing situation on the next play. They had some plays that they just, you had penalties that put them behind the chains. That's one of the things that led to that first interception. You had a holding call on Biotish, and instead of like a second and four, you're second and 14. And then you get 7 yards on third down, but you're still in a passing situation. So instead of being able to run the ball, you have to pass the ball. I don't think it was – Minnesota made some nice plays defensively. You know, Taylor averaged about 6-plus per carry, but didn't really rip off any big runs. They limited him. But I don't think the loss of Cashman really affected Minnesota that much. And he hadn't done much in that game to that point.
It's interesting to think of how the dominoes would fall if Wisconsin wins this game. Minnesota is not bowl eligible. You talked a little bit last week about how PJ Fleck, the act might be wearing a little thin. I mean, it's early in his coaching tenure, but you could tell how excited Minnesota is to have the axe. They brought it to the Minnesota Vikings-Packers game on Sunday night, got a big cheer. I mean, this is a big deal to Minnesota, and understandably, first time in 15 years they've had the axe. I wonder if the Badgers win this game, is PJ Fleck in trouble, do you think? Like, legitimately, maybe next year he'd be on the hot seat? And now I wonder, now that Minnesota won, if that's completely reversed, if now he's accomplished one of his big goals, maybe, I don't know, like the history could be so different based on the outcome of this game.
Yeah, I don't think he would have been on any hot seat. I mean, they've got money invested in him. They have a young team. I have not gotten, and I talked to some people who cover Minnesota. I talked to them during the, you know, before the game, and they've got no indication from anybody in administration who makes the decisions that he's on any hot seat, or would have been on a hot seat had they not gotten to a bowl game. So is his act wearing thin? Yes. I mean, because, you know, he went from was it earlier this year when he started talking about this was not year two, it was year one, because first year was year zero. But then yesterday I noticed in the video that he talked about how, well, this is now year two in our culture, and it's just relax. I mean, his act wears thin with me because I had to deal with him in Texas for the Cotton Bowl. You know, he's a solid coach. They can recruit. They put together a really nice team at Western Michigan. But no, he wasn't going to be in any trouble. I mean, would Minnesota fans been upset to see 15 years in a row? Yeah, but I don't think the administration would have looked at PJ Fleck and said, "You're not getting it done. You're not cutting it."
On the Badger sideline, I don't think even the most dissatisfied fans realistically think there's going to be any major changes to the coaches going forward. Obviously, Paul Christ is still going to be here. The coordinators are still going to be here. Do you think, though, that they will look at this season and make any adjustments in the coaching ranks or any personnel? I mean, any philosophies are going to shift because this team went 7-5?
I don't think they're going to be nearly as reactionary as fans are right now or want them to be. Now, Paul, this is probably a little bit new for Paul because his first 3 years were at Pitt, and that was a rebuilding situation because they had gone through, I want to say, five coaches in a ridiculously short span for a number of reasons, coaches leaving, bad hires, etc. I think Paul is kind of he's a plugger. He's a grinder. He will look at this and they'll evaluate, you know, they evaluated the good and the bad after a 13-1 season. So they're going to sit down and evaluate what went right, what went wrong. But I don't see him making any moves where he calls somebody in and says, you know what, you're done. You're out of here. I think you might have a change or two if someone gets a better job offer, which would lead to some changes. I don't know at this point if that's going to happen. That, you know, that'll be determined as the year unfolds. You got the convention later in the year, so we'll see about that. But I don't see Paul being reactionary and start making personnel moves just because he thinks that the program's in trouble.
We've been looking at the future of certain Badgers over the last few podcasts. TJ Edwards had another big game. I believe he had 12 tackles. And Ryan Connolly, you mentioned him. He has really had a pretty good season on the defense, or I would say very good season defensively. What about these two guys, TJ Edwards, Ryan Connolly? What do you think their future holds?
It's funny. I asked Jim Leonard last week before the Minnesota game about Van Ginkel, Connolly, and Edwards. I said, look, you played. These guys have a chance to make the pros. And he looked at me and said, absolutely. He listed the reasons why. But he said that history has proved that if you're productive in this defense, you're going to get a chance to play, and you're probably going to make some plays there. So all three guys are going to, they expect all three guys will get a shot. I really like Van Ginkel, maybe of the three, just because he can really do a lot of things on the edge. Not to say that the other guys won't have a chance, but Van Ginkel can do so many things because of his ability to run, and he's big, got just kind of a really long arms, and can get the balls in coverage. I mean, you saw him break one up against Minnesota in the first half. So, but yeah, Leonard thinks all three guys are going to have a future in the NFL.
All right, let's switch to the hard court. The Badgers basketball team took second in Battle for Atlantis down in the Bahamas. Took second to number 4 ranked Virginia in the championship game. First loss of the season for Wisconsin. And I thought they played okay. Like, Virginia's a tough defensive matchup, and first half looked ugly. Second half, they kind of figured some things out, made it fairly close. Is this a team? I mean, you pointed out last week, this is a pretty good team, but I'm kind of thinking this team could actually contend for a Big Ten title here. There's Michigan, Michigan State, there's some good teams in there, but how do you think this Badgers team has shown that they absolutely could compete for the Big Ten this year? There's still too much to fix, I guess.
I think they've shown that they're going to be a tough out for anybody in the league on a given night. Whether that means they can contend, I don't know. I haven't really seen Iowa, for example. I haven't seen Nebraska. Nebraska's got everybody back. Iowa's got everybody back and added some nice pieces. So the only question I have about a team like Iowa is every year they talk about a greater commitment to defense. They're going to be a better defensive team, and I've yet to see it under Fran. So I'll believe it when I see it. I've seen Michigan a little bit. I've seen Michigan State a little bit. I think it's going to be a really competitive league. I think it's interesting that some of the national pundits are already saying that it may be the deepest league, the best league from top to bottom, where it's going to be a gauntlet on any given night. So, but I think they're going to be a tough out for anybody, whether they play home or away. Because I think they have a lot more pieces. I think I'll be interested to see how quickly Aline Ford can get up and running and get back to the level he was playing at before he suffered the injury, where they scrimmaged Iowa State, and he was arguably one of their best players on the court that day. You can tell down in the Bahamas, he's way just starting to work his way in slowly. He's had a schedule, which is going to help them. But if he can get back to the level, that adds him another shooter, makes their rotation deeper and gives the coaching staff more flexibility. So they're going to be a tough out for no matter who they play.
Yeah, Aline Ford, kind of surprising that he was back so soon. I think we were all looking at December. And so shooting is primarily where you think Aline Ford's going to help this team. I mean, I'm guessing kind of both sides of the ball he would help, right?
Well, he was their best three-point shooter a year ago at a little more than 40%. Now, they struggled from three as a team. They're only 32 and change. But they had thought, we never saw him play in a game until the Bahamas. But they thought that he was, mostly a three-point shooter last year, but they thought he could expand his game this year. Now, that's why I'm really curious to see what he can do. Does he just settle for threes? Can he have a mid-range game? Can he post up? Because you got to remember, he's 6'7", kid. And I'll be curious to see how teams match up with Wisconsin. And I'll also be curious to see, once Ford is back up and running, how Greg uses him. Does he start him? Does he bring him in off the bench? Does he work him in to the starting rotation eventually? It gives you another offensive threat to surround Hap. For example, if you go with Hap and Iverson, teams know that they can lay off Iverson. If he's, 15 feet, they don't need to guard him, basically. He's not going to take a shot, or he'll take one occasionally. But if you have Hap and it's Ford, Davison, Trice, King, I'm not sure who you lay off of. I'm not sure. Different teams, like down in the Bahamas, one team decided, okay, we're guarding the three-point line, we're going to let Hap go one-on-one. Another team said, okay, we're going to double-team Hap. And then you surround them with shooters and you can do a lot of things. So just adding another guy to the mix that gives them more flexibility and another weapon to throw out there.
What did you think of that Virginia game? I came away feeling like Virginia's a really good team. Got some great players, very good defensively. I felt like that was kind of a net positive in that the Badgers were able to battle back in the second half. What did you see from that game?
I wasn't surprised at the type of game that was played. I would have been surprised if it would have been a high-scoring game, just because of the way Virginia plays defense and because of the games Virginia and Wisconsin have played. I mean, last year was, I don't know, let's say 49-37 in Charlottesville. They're not going to put up a lot of points. Now, the interesting thing about Virginia, when Jim Polzin and I covered that game last year in Charlottesville, we left thinking, this is really not that good of a Virginia team, and they went 31-3. So I'm really not sure. This team on paper and early in the season looks better than last year's team was, but I don't know if this team is going to be a number one seed and win 30 games. But it's a good team. It's a well-coached team, and it's a team that defends. So anyone who says, oh, my God, Wisconsin, see, it's the same old team. They can't score. A lot of teams are going to struggle to score against Virginia. That's just the way it is. So it was a good tournament for them. Two good victories. A tough game against Virginia. I think they continue to build a foundation, and we'll talk to the coaches this week coming off that tournament, but I think they're probably feeling pretty good where the team stands right now, knowing they still have a long way to go, but I think they have a pretty optimistic view of this team.
He is Jeff Patricus, covering the Wisconsin Badgers for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, both the football and basketball teams. We'll take a couple-week break here and do this once again when the Badgers, as we prepare for the bowl game, once they know their destination, and we'll be getting set for the final days before that. We'll talk to you then, Jeff. Thanks.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks to Jeff Patricus for joining us on this episode of the Wisconsin Badgers Journal Sentinel podcast. We're going to take a couple weeks of break now. We're going to come back and preview the Badgers when we know what bowl game they're headed toward, and we're in the final week before that game kicks off. We'll come back and do one more football podcast for the season, then, of course, one more to wrap it up. We're not going to do a full-fledged basketball podcast. I know I had a couple people ask me about that. We will occasionally, I think, get back into Badger basketball. I'm pretty sure we'll certainly do something in advance of the Big Ten tournament, the NCAA tournament. If there's another big game along the way, we'll probably do something with that as well. So don't delete your Wisconsin Badgers Journal Sentinel podcast feed just yet. There might be a couple more things coming your way before spring is over, or I should say before spring arrives. And obviously, like I said, there will be more Badgers content to come, just not here in the next couple weeks. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and if you're looking for something to listen to, you can always check out the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. The Bucks continue to have plenty of success, and I talk every week with Matt Velasquez. Try to get that podcast out either Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday each week, depending on the Bucks schedule. And there's also, of course, the Milwaukee Brewers podcast, which is dormant for the time being, but feel free to check that out. You can find that again at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify, or simply at jsonline.com. Hey, if you're not a subscriber to the Journal Sentinel, this is a good time for you. Big time savings and a chance to get the first three months for $5. Visit jsonline.com/deal. You can find, I'll also pin the link in my Twitter bio right to the top of my Twitter page for the time being, and you can follow it that way. That link actually will help me personally, so by all means, give me some love, and that'll ultimately work out nicely for my own bottom line. But if you are looking to check out what we have at jsonline.com, we've got tons of good coverage. Certainly Jeff Patricus and the Badgers will be something to follow going forward, as well as our Bucks, Packers, Brewers, Badgers, whatever else we got for you in the sports desk. Lots to digest. jsonline.com/deal to get the savings that we're offering here during the holiday season. Hope you enjoyed this edition of the Badgers Journal Sentinel podcast. My name again is J.R. Radcliffe. Find me on Twitter at J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. For Jeff Patricus, we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks.